Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Rolling along this morning on SB Nation Radio, I'm Tony D along with Ron Culver. And we've been doing football, we've been doing baseball, we've done college football polls. You know, all of this is going to come to a big, exciting conclusion or finish or start or whatever you want to talk about. Labor Day weekend. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting close enough. You can start really feeling it. I know we've been saying it a number of times, just to sort of remind you, college football actually starts this weekend. There's four games on the slate. They're not huge games by any means, but at least it's going to be available to you if you want to watch. Rice is playing, Colorado State is playing. The Rams are playing at home against Hawaii. Their coach is hospitalized for numbness in his feet. I remember I got numbness. I was running, and I got numbness in my leg, like, just big, huge part of my leg was numb. And I remember not thinking it was a big deal until I told a friend of mine. He said, no, you need to go look. You need to go check that out. That could be really serious. Like, I'd be jogging along and I'd be like, wow, why is my leg asleep? I'm trying to get blood circulating and it's going. And I was ran a couple of laps around the track and I was like, why is it falling asleep? They said, go check it out. Now, me, I had like a sciatica thing. I had to massage it out and they put some heat on it and whatnot. And it kind of went away. Mike Bobo's situation, he has numbness in his feet, and doctors don't really know why. And he's been hospitalized for a while now. And they don't know if he's going to be ready this weekend when Colorado State takes on Hawaii. I'll tell you.
God, how bummed would he have been if it was an away game for him, though?
Yeah, I know, right? If he's in the hospital, I'm like, oh.
I mean, I know you don't want to be in the hospital regardless, but it would have sucked that much more if you knew your entire team was going to Hawaii and you're sitting there, well, I'm going to be coaching from a hospital bed in Colorado.
Yeah, and I'll be like, well, no. And I got stupid numbness in my feet.
Yep. What? Can't even walk to the window.
They say it's peripheral neuropathy, but they don't know how to like
fix
it.
What is that?
I don't know what that is.
I think that's making up words.
I think they did that to throw us off. It could be something simple, but they say doctors are still trying to figure out why he has numbness in his feet. Can you imagine being in the hospital in 2018 and doctors are like, oh, man, I don't have no idea. That seems so weird.
Call house now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what kind of flesh-eating bacteria is this? Well, good luck, Mike Bobo. I hope you're on the sidelines this weekend when you take on Hawaii in beautiful Fort Collins, Colorado. Coming up, speaking of Colorado, John Elway's comments could come back to haunt him about what he said about Kaepernick. That's next.
Back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, I'm all excited tonight because episode 3 of Hard Knocks is going to be on. Training camp with the Cleveland Browns. We only got a couple more left before the start of the season.
So God, I need to catch up.
Catch up. It's pretty good. I saw this, before we get to John Elway, I saw this thing that was interesting on Twitter. I don't see many interesting things on Twitter, but I saw this.
You don't? You're using Twitter wrong.
I know I'm using Twitter wrong. I know I got to find more interesting stuff on Twitter. They were talking about the Browns because in the Hard Knocks, one of the players for the Browns, Ndoku, he was missing catches. He was missing balls. So they punished him by making him catch 30 balls with the jugs machine, 30, after practice. And then somebody said, Cleveland punishes, for making him catch 30 balls with the jug machine. Antonio Brown, after practice, caught 150 balls with the jug machine and had a player grab one arm so he caught most of them one-handed. Like, that's the difference between the two franchises. It's like Antonio Brown on his own caught like 150 balls using the jug machine after practice and most of them one-handed while they just made this guy catch 30 regular as punishment for dropping him during practice.
Cleveland's coming up with some great punishments.
Yeah, great punishments.
I mean, making guys work harder. It's like, you know what? Instead of suspending you or giving you time off or sending you to your room, no. You're doing more.
Do more. Work out. He had a good game against the Giants, so apparently it paid off. I guess.
The other receiver, who was the receiver that you got?
Corey Coleman.
Yeah, and he had a good game.
He had a good game.
So it's paying off.
Yeah.
Work harder. It's like Chinese labor camp.
No. Antonio Callaway. Corey Coleman got traded. Yeah. Corey Coleman, at the beginning of episode two, not giving anything away, they showed his apartment with all of his shoes. And then they showed him complaining about playing time or playing with the second stringer, and then he got traded to Buffalo. Antonio Callaway is the guy that they found a roach in his car. The police did, and he didn't tell his coaches. He got chewed out for that.
And
played an entire game as punishment. They wouldn't take him out, no matter how much he begged. They wouldn't take him out. All right, so John Elway, we played this earlier last week, right? Was it last week we played this? I get all my days confused.
Yeah, I think it was last. Let's go.
John Elway at a press conference in Denver was asked about, this was last week, was asked about Colin Kaepernick and about whether or not, because he's got some quarterback problems. Well, since the backup quarterback situation is dire in the Mile High City, would you think about bringing in Colin Kaepernick? Now, here's what Elway said. And then we'll get to the ramifications of it. Here's Elway.
Well, you know what? And I said this a while ago. And, you know, Colin had his chance to be here. We offered him a contract. He didn't take it. So, you know, and as I said in my deposition, and I don't know if I'm legally able to say this, but, you know, he's had his chance to be here. He passed it.
All right. So that's John Elway publicly saying what was in his deposition. Remember, Kaepernick is suing for collusion. He's suing on the thought that there are teams that have conspired to bring, that will, you know, are not bringing him, that everyone's under an agreement not to bring him into the league. They are colluding against him from continuing his profession as a professional football player based on initiating the anthem protests. So Mark Garagos, who's his attorney, and I had to ask Ron, because Ron's a Southern California guy, is this the same Mark Garagos, Mr. L.A. lawyer, Mr. Michael Jackson, Scott Peterman? Lawyer to the stars, Mark Garagos is Colin Kaepernick's attorney. So Elway said, as I said in my deposition, and I don't know if I'm legally able to say this, it's not a very good Elway impression, but I did my best. And Mark Garagos says in response on a podcast, Mr. Elway, clearly he violated the protective order that the NFL has been wielding at me like a club. He is apparently suffering from some real brain trauma. He's just, he says, basically, we'll be dealing with this at a later time. As far as Kaepernick is concerned, he's laser focused. He's working out. Saw him last week. Physically, he could not be in better shape. He's impressively in shape, going to be ready at any moment. I don't know. Is Elway going to get in trouble for this from the Mark Garagos camp for breaking the order? He says we will be dealing with this down the road.
You know, Elway seems to me like he's that gunslinger in the Westerns that just doesn't get in trouble with the law or anything. But, you know, everyone's got his back.
Yeah, that's the thing. Elway, and I can't stress this enough. Elway, let me try to give it an example. Dave Gettleman is the New York Giants general manager. Let's say there was Eli Manning trouble, some other trouble, teams not playing well trouble, and Gettleman stood on the podium. When Gettleman looks out to the New York media, how many friendly faces do you think he sees? Probably zero. When John Elway goes to the podium and the Broncos have quarterback trouble, backup quarterback trouble, you know, injury trouble, not playing well trouble, coach trouble. When John Elway gets to the podium, and how many friendly faces does he see? All of them. All of them. That's the beauty of bringing in John Elway when you were Pat Bowlen to the Denver Broncos. When John Elway joined the Broncos in the front office, the team was a mess. But when you bring in John Elway, you can now put a friendly face to the franchise, a face people love to see on a day in and day out basis. They want to hear from him. They like what he has to say. They take what he has to say as gospel. So if he says X, we really could take it to heart. He means it. He's John Elway. He's one of us. He's Denver. He's the prince of the city. He gave us the Super Bowls. We're attached to the hip, fan base and I. That's what he's up there. He's very comfortable. I am telling you right now, no other general manager would have done what John Elway did in their press conference, because they would know there was tension in the room. There would have been some sort of backlash. There would have been some sort of ramification for that immediately. Elway is like, there's friendly people. He's yucking it up with his media friends in Denver, who all, some of them covered him when he was playing. Some of them continued to talk to him and maybe watched him play golf on the scene. You know, he tried to make the senior open in Broadmoor. I mean, he's John Elway gets to do all these things. So Garagos goes on his podcast and talks about Elway. He says he violated the protective order. The NFL has been wielding it like a club at me. We will deal with that in the hearing. Now, I don't know what this means. I'm not a legal guy. I don't know what this means for John Elway, but it may not mean anything for John Elway other than Garagos might actually have a situation where he could prove collusion. Maybe. I don't know. And what does that mean for Kaepernick? He just gets cash. He's not going to play. So that's basically where that... Do you think Colin Kaepernick ever sees a football field again?
No.
I don't either.
Canadian.
Maybe Canadian,
or
right?
Maybe the Alliance.
Has anybody offered him a job like in the Canadian League, like they did Manziel or anything?
I think there was interest, but didn't he just shoot it down right away?
Yeah,
it's like, no, I don't want to be in the CFL. I'm only NFL.
Yeah, I think he's trying to focus of his attention on
now this. It's gotten to a point. I understand that he's working out. He's probably in the best shape he's ever been in his life, but he's not football ready.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, huge factor now.
Oh, and we hear that all the time. Don't we hear that all the time from agents?
We do.
That's why T.O. did sit-ups in his driveway, right?
Great. Because whenever you do sit-ups, so can I.
Yeah, when you're out of the game for a long time, your PR people, your lawyer, your agent, whoever, is always saying, oh, I've never seen somebody. He looks like a Greek god. Well, yeah, of course. I mean, what are you going to say? He's sitting around eating Cheetos all day watching The View? Of course not. He's working out like crazy. That's how you sell your client. We hear this all the time. Ray Rice just needs an opportunity. Just get back in the league. He's working out like crazy. Ray Rice never played again. Right? Kaepernick's going to reach a point where just age alone. What a small window that is. If you're a professional athlete, what a small window. If you get in that kind of, not, I don't want to say trouble, but if you get that kind of controversy and you know, nobody wants you and nobody's picking you up and you're too hot to handle and the years go by. I mean, what's Kaepernick going to do? Finally get in the league at 37? Like, it's eventually a point where it's not going to be collusion. It's going to be, yeah, he's too old. Can't put him in. He's too old. I don't know when that's going to. I don't know when that's coming. But
that's what I was thinking. I mean, you know, this new alliance, American Alliance Network,
yeah,
or whatever
exactly.
It is. Actually might be beneficial for Kaepernick to get into.
Are they going to sell it? Are they going to sell that new alliance league like Vince McMahon sold the XFL 20 years ago?
I don't know.
We're bringing Smash Mouth football back to football.
I think they're just trying to create another football league for the spring.
Yeah, which I
and
always,
they're going to compete never, against the XFL.
I never understood why there wasn't a spring football league even on a minor level. I never understood that.
Because the weather is terrible in the spring.
I know it's expensive. Yeah, exactly. That's true. A lot of rain. I know it's expensive and you're not, you know, but I don't know. The USFL was working great until Trump and the owners decided to go up against the NFL. Players went to that league. They had some fans. It was doing well television-wise. There wasn't NFL ratings yet, but it was doing pretty well. It was a spring league. People seemed to enjoy it. They got Doug Flutie. They had Herschel Walker. They had a lot of good players in that league. Jim Kelly was in the USFL for a bit. And now, like, there's no spring league, and there hasn't been a spring league in forever and a day, ever. I mean, since the early 80s with the USFL. I'm interested in seeing what the new XFL is going to be. That was a television show. I got to talk about that one day. Because I remember going to the Vegas press conference. And that whole thing, I was really excited about. Man, I was all gung-ho for the XFL. I was living in Vegas. I wanted that so bad.
They had some good things, but I think, you know, having players choose their own nicknames and
yeah,
different things like that. It's like, okay, that was a little dumb.
Making two players run at full speed to get the ball that was placed at the 50-yard line, that was kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, instead of a kickoff, I'm going to send two guys at top speed to ram into each other to get that football because we believe in smash-mouth football. The first time they did that The guy broke his shoulder and was out for the year. The first time they did that in the first game. Like, who didn't see that possibility? God, XFL. I was so gung. I don't want to pick on the air. I can't. I mean, my wife will tell you because she remembers. I couldn't wait for that league to come to Vegas when I was living out there. I couldn't wait for it to come to Vegas. I was so excited for it. It was crazy. I wanted a job with the team and everything. I couldn't wait. I thought it was going to be the next big thing. I was all in, and then it just disappeared. The ratings were good for like week one, and then it started to decline. All right, 800-777-2907. Tony D, Ron Culver, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Connor O'Gara will join us from Saturday Down South coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll talk to him about the SEC. We're going through our some college football previews. All right, so I'm going off here because we were talking about Elway. We were talking about Kaepernick. Where could Kaepernick land? He's not going to go play in the NFL. I do believe that. I believe there's collusion, but I don't know if they're going to be able to prove it. I just think he's too hot to handle. But could he go in the XFL? Could he go into the American Alliance football? Could he go to the CFL? Possibly. I don't know if the XFL would want him. They're really, their new league, which is going to start in 2020, is a big anti-kneeling for the anthem stance. But I want to know about the cities, and I'm trying to find out if they've named any cities yet for the new XFL. And so far, there doesn't seem to be any. Orlando, San Diego, Pittsburgh, but nothing really concrete for a league that's starting in 2020. Now, I got to tell you, it's getting late in the game if you don't have any cities. This is not something you just spring up overnight. You got to get stadium deals. You got to get stadium clearance. You got to build an office. You got to start marketing your team. So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work out. But I want to get to this. I want to get to the XFL in just a second because I have a little bit of a brief history with the first go around. Summer's heat can be draining on your vehicle. Rising temperatures can cause battery fluids to evaporate. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts now. Have your battery tested free of charge. If your battery does need to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the exact Superstart battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So, Ron, do you remember the original XFL 2000, I think? It was like 2000, 2001?
Yeah.
Remember that? Okay. One of the problems that that league had was people were kind of into it a little bit. They were kind of curious because, you know, Vince McMahon was putting it together. And, you know, Vince McMahon was a pretty smart guy. And if you saw the documentary on the XFL, the 30 for 30 on it, which I loved, it was so good. One of the problems I thought the league had made at the time, which I hope they don't make if you want to do this around again, is the only thing that seemed to matter was whether or not they put on a good TV show. And a lot of times sports is kind of the other way around, whereas your product is good, so it makes good television, rather than the product is terrible, so you make good television around it. For example, the NFL. The NFL is hoping that their games are entertaining, that you'll watch for a variety of reasons, but that you're watching the best players in the world. Can't guarantee you the game is going to be good, but because there is value to the outcome, you'll watch it. In the XFL, there wasn't any value to the outcome. If you watched Vegas versus LA, for example, it didn't really matter who won. What were you watching it for? For football? Great. Was it good football? No. Was it football anyway? Yeah. So the problem was, is that the sport needed a television partner, the league for it needed a television partner, and it had it with NBC, but the only thing that mattered were the ratings, not how the product was doing in stadiums and local dollars and local sponsorships. Now, that's fine business model if you make it work. That's not a guarantee to failure. If you have a league that gets great television ratings, like if you put together a roller derby thing, for example, and you throw it on CBS every Sunday night and it gets monster ratings, it doesn't matter if there's local affiliates and how they travel and all that stuff. Right? It doesn't matter what the local sponsorship dollars are. If you're generating the kind of revenue that you can get from television, great. And the XFL did very, very early. The problem was it wasn't sustainable. So, Ron, do you remember how they promoted the league as it was progressing in the season? Hey, next week we're going to put cameras in the cheerleaders' locker room. Like, it was little things like that that they started doing to get you to tune in.
Don't remember that. I would have tuned in.
Yeah.
Now, I know one of the innovations that did come out of the XFL was the Spider Cam.
Was the Spider Cam, yep. That was exactly right. Yeah.
And we need that. I like that.
Now, Tommy Maddox was like the MVP of the league.
That should tell you all you need to know about
Tommy
the XFL.
Tommy Maddox.
And who was it? He Hate Me?
Rod Smart. I think he played for the Carolina Panthers. I think he got a gig with the Panthers later on.
He had to change his name.
Oh, yeah. He Hate Me. He Hate Me was huge. But that was the thing that was kind of sad about it, was it started to stumble. You know where it made a big mistake? And there's a really good in the 30 for 30, they go in detail. So the XFL had this deal with NBC, and they had these Saturday night games. And they had one game, and I can't remember the particulars. I would have to look it up, but I'd rather just kind of go along. I think it was like Chicago and Los Angeles or something. They were playing on a Saturday night. And the game was starting, and they had a power failure at the stadium. So they had to wait for the power to come back up again. So that takes a while. Remember when the Superdome, when the power went out of the Superdome? You know, at the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
It's not a switch you just flick on and the lights come back on. Everything's got to be powered back up again. You have to find the problem. You have to get power to the unit. Then you have to power it up. It takes a while to warm up. Then it warms up, and then the lights come back on again. So that was the problem with this stadium. So anyway, picture this. It's a Saturday night. Here's a football game that's not getting good numbers. They are got a power outage, so they're delayed. And the game goes into overtime. And NBC is contractually obligated to carry it live. What television iconic program do you think on Saturday night on NBC would it run into if you had a double overtime game that was delayed by a power outage and one of the most powerful entertainment figures standing at the helm?
That's a tough one. It's on the tip. You're talking about on a Saturday night?
On a Saturday night.
What live show would be on a Saturday night? It'll come to me. Come back to me.
And they had Jennifer Lopez that night.
Jenny on the Block.
Yes. Lorne Michaels. So his Saturday Night Live, they ended up running an old show. They Lorne Michaels like, screw it, run a tape show. I don't care. This is ridiculous. And this is nonsense. This is never going to happen again. And he threw a fit because the XFL carried into his Saturday Night Live.
You know what needed to be done? Vince and Lorne just needed to jump in the ring together.
Exactly.
Settle it like men, mano y mano. I mean, Vince isn't that far. Vince is in Connecticut. That's a day's drive down to New York, right?
Exactly.
A couple hours away.
Can you imagine Vince McMahon saying, Vince, I went to the press conference with Vince McMahon in Vegas. He was the scariest guy I'd ever interviewed. I mean, it was just a press conference. I didn't interview him one-on-one. He was like he was humongous. I mean, he's a humongous person. And he spoke, and this was the interesting thing. He really spoke with authority. Like, he really spoke with, force. He wanted to make this great. I mean, really great. Here's the Saturday Night Live. The Los Angeles Extreme versus the Chicago Enforcers. By the way, they were great names. This sounds like what your kid would design if he was playing, if he started a team. The Enforcers. Went into double overtime. The double overtime combined with the power outage early in the game due to someone not fueling a generator. How does that happen? Oh, my God. Before the game delayed the contest, causing the start of Saturday Night Live to be pushed back from 11:30 to 12:15. This angered Michaels, who expected high ratings with Jennifer Lopez on the show. Yep, certainly did. Poor XFL. All right, we'll talk some SEC football. There's some quarterback battles going on. How is the league or the conference set up from the middle down? We know it's a good top up. How is it from the middle down? We'll talk to Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, that AP poll came out on Monday looking around the college football landscape. We're going down south to the SEC, where apparently it means more. Somewhere I've heard that. Connor O'Gara joins us. He is the senior national columnist for SaturdayDownSouth.com and SaturdayTradition.com. And he joins us here on SB Nation AM. How are you?
I'm doing well. We got football coming up in a very short matter of time here. So life is good. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. All right, let's talk about the Southeastern Conference because they kind of move the needle in this sport. All right, so let's start with Alabama. I mean, from a standpoint of the quarterback controversy, okay, it is what it is. But as far as Alabama, as they're always loaded, is this particular unit more loaded or less loaded than what he usually brings to the table, Nick Saban?
Well, I think it's just as loaded. And he had the fun little quote over the weekend, which might have to earmuffs for some of your younger listeners there about, also the PG version, crapping out players. And that just sort of speaks to this belief that Alabama just has this factory where it is next man up, and you see guys like Terrell Lewis go down in the preseason, and guys like Najee Harris who get banged up, and they can just throw somebody else in there, and everything's just going to be okay, and it's going to be perfectly fine. But I do believe that's going to be the case. I mean, we saw Alabama's depth last year get sort of tested in that Auburn game, and the way that they ended the season when they were finally healthy suggested that, okay, maybe it does actually make a difference that, when you have your starters back healthy and ready to go, guys like Mac Wilson. I do think this is another year where Alabama just reloads. I mean, this is a team that, in my opinion, is the clear number one team in the country and might have more upside than ever with having Tua Tagovailoa as the starting quarterback, which is what I believe will happen. So, I mean, it's hard to look at Alabama's roster and say, yeah, that team can't compete for a national championship because they lost this player, they lost that player. When you win 5 of 9, don't you just sort of give up on that belief?
Yeah, exactly. I want to ask you about the coaches. Dan Mullen is now at Florida. Jeremy Pruitt's at Tennessee. Jimbo Fisher's in this league now. Joe Moorhead comes into Mississippi State. There's new coaches in this league. Chad Morris at Arkansas. In terms of who has the toughest hill to climb, which team is that and which coach is dealing with that now?
I'd say the toughest hill to climb is Chad Morris at Arkansas. And that part of that is just because of what he was given. And I think that roster, while it does have some talented pieces there, is just going to need a complete overhaul to get it to the system, to play to the system that he wants. He wants that up-tempo style to be able to play, fast and get as many plays in as possible. He wants to spread teams out. He's this, Texas high school football guru, so to speak. And he's going to want to do things way differently than Brett Bielema did them. And I think just the division that he has to play in, overhauling that roster is not going to be an easy thing to do, and there are going to be some growing pains. He's going to have to really get into the state of Texas and get some big-time recruits, steal them away from Jimbo Fisher and from Tom Herman, which is becoming an increasingly difficult thing to do. And that's really what it's going to take for him to kind of build Arkansas into this steady 8-win program that can hang around in what many believe to be the best division in college football. So I'd say that he kind of has the toughest hill to climb. I think other coaches who came into the SEC have a little bit of a more instant fit. I've been talking all offseason about why I thought Joe Moorhead was the perfect personnel fit for what they have returning, especially in the offensive side of the ball, and I think he walks into a win-now scenario. And I'm not convinced as much that Jimbo Fisher and Dan Mullen have the same set of circumstances to work with, and Jeremy Pruitt as well. So I'd say that Morris has the toughest hill to climb, and Moorhead probably the easiest scenario to walk into right now.
Does Dan Mullen in Gainesville, does he have a Gator team that really just needs a couple of things to go right, and then they're back to being on top of the East? I mean, their records, they have bad records, and then they have years where they went to the SEC title game. So where's Florida sitting today?
That's a good question, because I think people look back on those teams that won the division title back-to-back years, and they think Florida was a little lucky. And Florida had talent, don't get me wrong, but they were a little bit lucky to get there because of the amount of close games that they won. And I think Jim McElwain was sort of, you know, just hanging by a string for so much time, and that's why it came so, it unraveled so easily. And I think people kind of question how good those teams really were. And the big question, of course, with Dan Mullen is, can he develop a quarterback at Florida? That's going to, for many people, getting something from that position, getting some sort of steady production is going to be the difference and what takes this team back to more of the Tim Tebow-like levels that we saw under Urban Meyer. Whether or not they get there with Georgia as the juggernaut right now, that remains to be seen. I think Georgia right now still has a clear advantage in terms of winning that battle in the trenches. They are still clearly ahead of Florida, and I think that's going to show this year. But I do think that he is the right guy to be able to turn that program around. If there's ever going to be a guy who's going to come in and fix that offense, it's Dan Mullen. And I think that you've got to be patient with the current quarterback situation right now, because I am obviously not a believer in Felipe Franks. I actually think Kyle Trask is going to end up being the starter for that team. And I'm not a believer necessarily that it's going to be an overnight fix. And even with a guy like Emory Jones, who comes in with a lot of hype, I just think it's going to take a little bit of time. There are still some growing pains ahead for the Florida offense, even though the skilled players around the quarterback situation are talented. The defense is talented as well. I just think it takes a little bit longer for someone like Dan Mullen to get his foundation put in place. And Florida is going to be on the up and up, but it just might take a year or two.
When I full disclosure, I went to South Carolina. So when somebody talks to me, when we talk about our school, our teams, they always say, we're going to be good this year. And my answer is, good like SEC East winning good or Outback Bowl good? Because there's two different goods than what we deal with South Carolina. But what's the national take on what Will Muschamp is doing there? He's got a quarterback. What else is going right?
Well, I think a lot of people were surprised to see that South Carolina started off outside of the top 25. I would have had South Carolina in the top 25 to start the season, and I'm currently working on a column for SDS about this, about why did the Gamecocks start outside of the top 25? They won 9 games last year. They beat a good Michigan team in a bowl game in the Outback Bowl, and they returned so much talent from that offense. And if you get Deebo Samuel back healthy, I mean, aren't we expecting this team to be much better? But I think there are a few other things that contribute to that. While we do believe in the offensive talent that returned, getting a guy like Brian McClendon to come in there and put his stamp on the offense, we think is going to be big. Having someone like Dan Warner to work with Jake Bentley and allow him to take that next step, we think those things are going to contribute. But I think a lot of people are just kind of in wait-and-see mode with South Carolina. Everybody knows about the Week 2 game against Georgia, and it kind of feels like if they win that game, then they'll be legit. But people don't want to anoint them yet. Got to remember, this is a team that hasn't been in the AP Top 25 since September of 2014. Yep. It has really been that long. I know they got in the playoff poll for 1 week last year, but this is still kind of a, you know, we want to see what you can do against these elite teams. A lot of people don't believe that division is really that strong, and winning 8-9 games in that division isn't necessarily a mark, you know, something that shows that you're deserving of being a Top 25 team, at least for some voters. So, I love what they return on offense, and I really hope Deebo Samuel stays healthy for a full year, because we saw at the beginning of last year what he's capable of. If he stays healthy for that team, I mean, yeah, the potential's there. I don't think they're going to beat a team like Georgia, but, you know, this is a team that could win 8-9 games this year and look a lot better than they did at points last year. One, I think they were 6-1 in games that were decided by one possession or less. Maybe they sort of change that margin and they win more of these comfortable games. But South Carolina is going to be an intriguing team to watch this year, no doubt.
Talking to Connor O'Gara, he is the senior national columnist, SaturdayDownSouth.com, SaturdayTradition.com. We're talking SEC. I want to go back to what you said about the division, because it's interesting. And look, I get it, preseason polls don't carry a lot of weight, but they do give us an indication of what people are thinking. It seems like the meat of the SEC is in the West with 4 ranked teams. But are some of the teams like Florida, South Carolina, are they kind of hovering around the outside top 25? Could have easily been there if a few voters kind of thought about them. How do you assess the East when the West looks so loaded?
Well, that's the thing, is that to me it's still Georgia just has, I don't know if it's one massive step or if we should call it 2 significant steps above the rest of the division, but I think that that's the case right now. I think that the roster that Kirby Smart has built and what they're going to be able to return, especially in the offensive side of the ball, is just going to be miles ahead of what anyone else in that division has. So I think that the middle of the division is really where things get interesting. With if Florida is going to be at least, I think they're a team that can improve by at least three games this year. And if South Carolina is right in that neighborhood as well, you know, there are a lot of people who think that this division is not one of the strongest in the country. And really, there isn't a ton to suggest that it isn't. I mean, Georgia dominated the division from start to finish last year, and games weren't even close. I mean, I think the closest game in the division was that South Carolina game, and they won it by two touchdowns. So until that narrative changes, what's to suggest that this isn't Georgia's division to lose? I mean, that, I don't see that changing anytime soon. You know, it'll be interesting to see if a team like Kentucky can make another step with someone like Benny Snell who can take over a game. There are certain upsets potentially that could happen in the division because I think there is a lot of parity. But in terms of it being this division that people respect nationally, it's got a ways to go. And maybe South Carolina and Florida finishing in the top 25 would start to change that narrative. But you know, being on the outside looking in, both of those two teams right now as the first two teams outside of the top 25, it doesn't necessarily add to the belief that Georgia has this gauntlet to get through to win another division title.
Let's go to LSU. Ed Orgeron lost two guys competing for the quarterback position. They transferred. Well, that just tells me that he's eyeing either two guys or three guys, more importantly. Is that what's going on at LSU, or is there a little more to the transfers of those two quarterbacks than just on what's on the surface?
Well, I think they saw the writing on the wall that Joe Burrow is going to be the starting quarterback in Baton Rouge. I don't think he's going to Baton Rouge unless that's the case. As much as Ed Orgeron wanted to say, I think he came out and said that that Burrow went to LSU knowing that he was going to have a competition, but that he liked the odds of the competition better than other places. I don't think he's going to LSU unless he's convinced that he's a starter. And everything that has happened since he transferred suggests that he is going to be the guy. I mean, everybody that you talk to at Ohio State just raves about the kid. I was at Big Ten Media Days, and I, you know, asked Urban Meyer, asked Ohio State players, why should LSU fans be excited about the beginning of the Joe Burrow era? And they kept saying how he's a made quarterback. He's a guy who isn't coming in as this as much as a mystery he is because of the fact that he's never started a game. He's someone who's got 3 years of starting experience working under coaches who know a thing or two about offense. And LSU fans have always been worried about, you know, their coordinator situation or whether or not their head coach knows how to run a modern offense and knows what that even looks like. And their evaluation of the quarterback position is so much different. And I think Burrow just feels different because he does have those 2 years of eligibility left, and he comes from Urban Meyer. I mean, this isn't a guy who's coming from Daryl Hazel's system or something like that. I mean, this is widely considered one of the best offensive minds in the sport. Yes, I know he's got a pending situation unfolding right now, but, you know, the offensive prowess is still there. So I think that there is a lot of optimism for what Joe Burrow can do. And just being that game-changing quarterback, he throws a nice deep ball. You know, he's mobile enough to be able to escape pressure. He does a lot of things right. He's just never been in the right situation to start. So I am really intrigued to see what he can do in Baton Rouge. And if he can be that game-changing quarterback that LSU has been desperately lacking since that last division title in 2011.
Connor O'Gara, really appreciate your time. Good stuff on the SEC. I could do a lot more because there's a lot of different storylines. Hope we get you on again soon.
Hey, appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
You got it. That's good stuff. From a good, the conference is deep. I mean, there's no question. I mean, look, I know the SEC fans like to brag about how deep their conference is, how every game is tough. Even if your team is not particularly looking that well, it's different in the SEC. But this is a conference that's got five teams ranked in the top 25 right now. I mean, again, preseason polls, take it what you want. At least the perception is this is still a very, very deep conference. 14 teams, and there's probably about seven that could have been ranked based on some, you know, depending on a couple of votes went here or there. 800-777-2907. It is Tony D and Ron Culver on SB Nation AM.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I liked Connor. He was good. Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. What a cool name for a website about college football. Saturday Down South. And by the way, you know how I introduced that segment by saying, We're going to talk SEC football. Somehow it means more. I seem to have heard that. What a tagline for a conference to tell everybody else that, I mean, it means something, but not as much.
It means more.
It just means more. They do that.
Does.
Sweet,
I mean, you,
it
think
does.
About it.
It's true.
They're the most consistent conference. I mean, we talked about this earlier. Big 12 will have a couple of good teams. Big 10 always has a couple of good teams. But, you know, it's usually the same. Like, you know, Big 10, it's usually Ohio State. Wisconsin comes in every once in a while. Michigan is up there every once in a while. SEC, it's, what, six teams at least every single year?
When I went to South Carolina, they were an independent. And then they went to the SEC, and people went crazy. They were so excited, even though they knew it was going to be years and years and years of getting beat up. They couldn't wait. They wanted just to be part of it. It was like, it's like finally getting invited to a country club that you've been knocking on the door forever. And they go, all right, come on in, join. Here's your jacket.
The wait is over.
The wait is over. And they couldn't wait. And they used to get slaughtered. I mean, slaughtered. I mean, Florida used to beat South Carolina like 55-3. Tennessee and Peyton Manning would come in. It'd slaughter them too. It would be a bloodbath. I mean, they would get killed. And nobody cared. Everyone was, eventually we'll get it. Eventually we'll figure it out. I just want to be in this club. I just want to be in this group. I want to be the cool kids. And the cool kids of the SEC. And now we're one of them. Good. It was a very... A very eye-opening moment for a lot of people, but it was something they had always wanted. So, all right, we'll continue along. I am Tony D. That's Ron Culver. At Tony D Radio is where you can hit me up on Twitter. At Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, is where you can find Ron. And we are SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.